Good morning, everybody. How are you doing today? So, this podcast is launching first on a Thursday. So hopefully your week's gone well or you've made some progress. I know I'm speaking to some people who've had operations for injuries and stuff like this, and you know, progress for them is very small versus progress for someone who's fully fit and healthy, so remember that. Any step forward is good, because more than likely, if you weren't taking any small steps forward, the likelihood is you are probably taking little steps backwards. That's typically how it happens with our health, because if we ignore it, it kind of mounts up, doesn't it? So I want to quickly cover a study on mindfulness and does it help you stick to your diet. I know it'll be mindfulness, blah, blah, blah. But it's important that we actually realize why this works and, you know, what the results are. So, you know, people say trust your gut, right? But do you even know what your gut's telling you to start with? Are you hungry? Are you craving? Are you bored? Are you anxious? Are you depressed? You know, once you start eating, do you know when you've had enough? Do you kind of, can you even rationalize, you know, the amount of energy and nutrients you've eaten, and that should be enough for a meal, or do you have to go on and eat 2,000 calories, you know? And this research looked at what was called interoception. So basically tuning into your body signals, understanding what they mean, and then aligning your behaviors accordingly. So this new study basically wanted two questions answered. The first one is, can a mindfulness program improve interoceptive awareness in people with hypertension, so high blood pressure? And this program was created by Eric Locks, so PhD, and the study lead author, right? And the second one was, can the mindfulness program improve how well people stick to a DASH diet, which is a low-fat, low-sodium eating pattern that's been shown to help reduce blood pressure in people with hypertension, right? So how does the study work? 201 adults with hypertension, average age of 60, 59% were female, 81% white, and extremely well-educated, with 73% of them having a bachelor's or graduate degree. So half of them were assigned 8-week mindfulness intervention, right? So 45 minutes a day, 6 days a week, and they attended 30 hours of group training sessions. The other half was as a control group. They were given basically a brochure with a bit of information. And here's what the study found, right? 6 months after the program began, participants in the mindfulness group showed significant gains in interoceptive awareness. The biggest improvements were in self-regulation, attention regulation, emotional awareness, and body listening, which is important, right? So they were able to stick to this kind of difficult diet, really, low fat, low salt. That's, you know, quite hard for people to stick to. You don't have to stick to it, you know, unless your doctors tell you that, but they didn't track their weight, unfortunately, to see if their weight was impacted. But all I said, you know, if you're putting that much work into mindfulness, you're going to get results, aren't you? A quote I love is, you know, read the book of yourself. You can read as many books as you want, but if you can't read the book of yourself, what's the point? You know, there's only one important book out there, and that's yourself. And, you know, there's a lot of authors out there that mash together a lot of ancient wisdom, modern wisdom, and, you know, pass it on as their own, and they're really occupied with reading. And there's some people out there that, you know, say the answers aren't in the books. You know, a really famous philosopher called Judy Krishnamurti was like this. You know, he never read many things, but he came out in his talks with wisdom that has been said through many centuries, many millennia. And you start thinking, well, maybe there is tapping into this kind of awareness of oneself that brings about a certain clarity of thought, which when explained in whatever age you're in, it actually makes sense in every age, you know? So if you're, you know, the answer for you could be, you know, for the first thing is to know that, what is your energy intake? What is your calorie intake? You know, how much energy are you putting in your body every day? And how much energy does your body actually need? Your energy, the energy you get from food comes from the nutrients. So protein, carbohydrates, fat, and technically alcohol, right? So that's where your energy comes from. So whatever nutrients you're eating are going to give you energy. The macronutrients obviously have different ways of working. You know, carbohydrate is our primary fuel source. You know, fats like help us optimize our hormone production and stuff like that is very important. But fats are higher, you know, more dense in calories than carbs. And then you got protein, you know, the building blocks. You know, but ultimately, the energy is what matters for if we're going to be in a gain mode overall or in a loss mode. And it doesn't really matter as well if you're. So I see a lot of people making this mistake, and you see a lot of it online. They say something like, you know, actually, I saw it in a group. He's saying something about wanted to know what time he ate his food, because he wanted to know if his weight loss was coming from when he was in ketosis or not, right? Which means he thinks that, you know, that he's only going to lose net fat in ketosis, whilst when he's not in ketosis, he's not. So the body, right, is always gaining and losing throughout the day. So you think of it as like, say you're going to the different state 30 times a day. So you get into a state of where there's low energy availability, your body's using your body fat for energy, and then you eat, and then obviously that doesn't need to happen, and then you've got carbs coming in, your insulin goes up, shuttling this energy to the muscle cells, all good stuff, right? And you're back and forth between these two zones each day. So it doesn't really matter if you're in one of the zones for super long, or, sometimes more times, but it's net, right? Like, have I been utilizing more of my stored energy today, or have I given my body enough energy that net it hasn't actually needed to, you know, it's dipped into it, but it's replaced it. Does that make sense? That's how it works. So remember, I thought that I'd raise that because it's important to know that, because you can, it's technically true that you're like in a fat burning state when you're like fasted and you're like doing some low intensity cardio, whatever, you know, fat energy has been used, but it doesn't actually matter in the grand scheme when total energy is considered. You know, if you are in a deficit all day, then great, but if you're not, then you're not going to lose that fat. There'd be some going back in anyway. So mindfulness stuff, this is important stuff, because obviously a lot of you will know about the energy intake you're meant to be on. You'll know your protein intake, you know your steps, right? So it's not so much like, okay, you've got the plan, it's basic, it's straightforward, it's super simple, but it's very powerful. And then you're like, okay, I've got the plan, what is stopping me executing this plan? And it's often emotional eating, sometimes binge eating, sometimes secret eating, sometimes it's really emotional, you know, regulating your emotions. And I think, you know, we're going to talk about stoicism a lot in the next challenge. And I think when it comes to stoicism, it's not about hiding away from your emotions. It's about understanding them and then being able to respond. So you don't want to feel like you're not in control. You know, and one of the emotions they mention a lot is anger. You know, anger is an emotion that really takes over you. If you let it. So if you lose yourself to anger, is what we say, you're in a really dangerous zone of doing something that you cannot take back. And a story they say, right, from the ancient Roman times, is that the Emperor Hadrian, as well educated as he was, as influential as he was, he did have a temper. And he had one temper in the court, and then he stabbed a slave in the eye. And then he felt really bad about this. So he said to the slave, like, I'm really sorry, like, this, you know, I'll do anything, what do you want? I'm the emperor. And he went, well, I just want my eye back, mate. And as powerful of a man as he was, the most powerful man in the world at the time, couldn't give him what he wanted, which was his eye back. And that was from anger. So there's emotions that are potentially more dangerous if we don't learn to manage them, and why we're getting angry in the first place. There's a quote, right, that maybe resonates with you or not, is that no one makes you angry, you make yourself angry. There's a truth to that. There's things in the world that you should get angry about, in my opinion. There's things that really do, okay, yeah, I guess I shouldn't react or respond in a really out of control way, where I can use this anger fuel about this injustice in a way that's going to actually benefit what we need to happen here, right? But there's some people that think anger's good, anger's great, and they feel alive when they're angry because it really stimulates like a lot of hormones, essentially, like your adrenaline's pumping, everything's going crazy, and you feel maybe alive. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But it's important to like learn where you are on the scale. Are you, you know, how much do you catastrophize, for example? You know, that's really like catastrophizing is when you do this. So you basically take something and then you let your thoughts run away, right? And then it turns into something big. And then there's a worse behavior happens to it. So we know that thoughts really cause a catastrophization of things. So thoughts are powerful because obviously they lead to potentially feelings and emotions, or they can make them worse. And if we don't recognize this pattern, this is what CBT is all about, right? So there was an interesting podcast I listened to by the best jiu-jitsu guy of all time in the gi. His name is Hodja Gracie. And he says that before his fights, he practiced so much going into a thoughtless state. Okay, so he didn't think about the fight. He didn't think about the environment he was in, nothing. He tried to minimize thoughts and just go blank, into like a black blankness. And people ask him, why is it? Because he, in that state, his adrenaline wasn't pumping as much, because thoughts are causing that, right? Remember this, he's thinking about fighting. Your adrenaline starts pumping, you start sweating, your muscles get tense, you start getting nervous, yeah? So he knew before the fight, there's nothing more he can do. So he must remain calm, even around the chaos of a competition. And he said that's the main thing he did. He was in the waiting for a fight. You just wouldn't be thinking about anything. Anything that came in, he would shuttle it away calmly, and he would remain in a really calm state. And it's the same thing when it comes to catastrophizing. Say you overeat, or you have a meal out, and you've eaten three courses, and you wanted just one meal. You've maybe had a night out. You know, you got to remember, you can leave those thoughts can just go crazy, and then they can make you feel worse. And then when you make you feel worse and you get stress response, then you want to eat more food to soothe that, and then you feel worse again, and it keeps going, eh? So when it comes to catastrophizing, notice that there's some key thoughts that can make them worse, and actually you just need to be an observer. You observe these thoughts without wanting to change them in a sense, or saying they're good or bad. You simply just look at them. And you might see the root of where those thoughts come from. Some of you might find that they've gone back to someone saying to you in Slimming World 20 years ago in a weekly check-in, and that's still in the back of your head. It's one of those, you know, main thoughts that come through all the time. It might be that something your husband or partner said to you, or an ex-boyfriend has said to you, or an ex-girlfriend, whatever, or something happened. There's some things that you will be made aware of in those moments if you're not judging yourself and you're just looking, that will have an aha moment. You'll have an insight into this, and the insight will change everything for you. And that's important to realize. But you must be in this zone of calmness and stillness to see. And this is, again, reading the book yourself. You read the book yourself, you find the new chapters, you find the new links back to the past, you find the new aha moments between A and B, and boosh, things change. You know, aha moments are very powerful, or insights, whatever you want to call them. One, all of you would have had this more than likely, is riding a bike. Riding a bike is hard when you first start, you've got no clue. But then, all of a sudden, you have a breakthrough. You get how it works, and you start cycling. I mean, you start practicing, but then once the wheels go off, you're just in. And then once you're in, you never lose it. All of you now could ride a bike, you know, maybe not as good as when you're younger, but you've had that insight into how it works, and it's done. And there's many things, you have insights into how things work, and then there's no need to relearn. You get it. Right, you all have, everyone has this in whatever domain they work in as well. You have an insight, it changes your brain forever, and you act from you act in a different way. Okay, so how many insights, you know, it's not all about collecting as many as you can, but how many insights are you going to have when you read the book yourself? I'll tell you, a lot. So another thing the author said in this study was that self-awareness improves nutrition. Even when they're not really focusing on nutrition all the time, the self-awareness was the triggering mechanism, right? And these are authors have got credentials in medicine, psychiatry, epidemiology, multiple areas of human development, mindfulness training, nutrition coaching, right? So, you know, telling people to be self-aware as much as they can, even just saying that to you today, you're going to have an improved diet today. Think about that. What do you think I do this podcast anyway? Do you know what I mean? It's to remind you daily, in the mornings, ideally, of these things. You go ahead for the day, and you're going to be self-aware today of your nutrition. You're going to remember the story of Hadrian and anger. You're going to think about catastrophizing and thoughts. You're going to think about being the observer without judging. And you're going to see that this calm, tranquil being is going to be able to see connections and things in the past in the right moments and have aha moments to change the way you behave forever. And you're going to realize that it's emotional regulation. You're responding, not reacting. And a few quotes to finish off with, guys. Back ancient philosophy, Socrates. So some quotes for you about these things, like that was said a long time ago. Again, they didn't know about calories at this point, but some men or some people live to eat and drink. I eat and drink to live. Okay, important distinction. Sometimes we can get, I think a lot of people needed to balance both here. Some people are in, I eat to drink and live. I live to eat. I love food. That's fine. Don't make it the only thing all the time. Like, we eat every day, get over it a bit. Do you know what I mean? It's nice to have nice food, but we're more than just like smashing our faces with pleasurable foods. Do you know what I mean? Like, we need to think sometimes about the fuel from the food. Well, how we want to perform. That has to come into the context as well, not just super pleasurable stuff. I eat some basic foods day to day, and I'm not trying to get a Michelin star taste from them. I'm like, it's high in fibers, high in protein, it's good energy. For example, oats, I like it, it makes me feel good. I'm using it for fuel, as opposed to, this is the best thing I've ever tasted in my life. Appetite is the best seasoning. Yeah, so that's a good one. So if you feel a bit hungry, you don't snack and stuff, that's really what's going to make your food taste great. Think of the favorite food you ever eat. Think of the favorite snack or whatever. Now think of eating 10 times the serving sizes you usually have of that. Do you now like it? So say now you like chocolate. Okay, I'm going to force you. I'm not going to actually do it, but I'm going to force you to eat 10 chocolate bars in a row. Now, is that length of chocolate bar nice? You go, no, it's horrible, that's pain. Exactly. So sometimes the best thing we can do for our taste buds is really to not overly excite them, not give them too much. Just to hold back a bit, I think tastes well, leave it there. You wake up the next day, ooh, that was lovely. Instead of, oh my God, I feel like I've been hit by a bus. That's what I feel like after I eat Indian food, because I eat a lot of, I love it. So I eat a lot of the breads and the sauces and stuff, yeah. Let's have a look here. It is impossible to live pleasurably without living wisely, well and justly, and impossible to live wisely, well and justly without living pleasurably. That's Epicurus. So Epicurus was all about pleasure. So it's interesting, right? They're around the same time. So he believed that to live wisely would to be to make sure you have pleasure, but not too much. It's interesting, yeah. So you think about, okay, what do I get pleasure in? But what's the moderation in pleasure, really? Don't take it too far. So there's a link to it. It's not about abstaining like a monk, right? Obviously. Nothing can nourish the human body unless it participates in some sweetness. Aristotle, again, same lesson. Don't deprive. This is key, you know. Don't deprive yourself of stuff. And I mention this all the time. I'm not an advocate of just clean eating all the time. You know, you need to have the things you really love in life. And if that's a glass of wine with your friends or a certain meal, just do it. Okay, and the last one. This is from the Roman era, guys. The way to keep healthy is to know one's own constitution, to understand what is good for it and what is bad, and to exercise moderation regarding all of one's physical needs. Again, bang on. Basically, the way to keep healthy is to know the book of yourself, to understand what is good and what is bad, in a sense, like, obviously, taking anything to extreme goes to the bad. You know, nutrients, dense foods, good, and moderation in one's physical needs. You know, don't overdo things, overextend yourself. And that's why one of the weeks on the challenge is about, like, what's the minimum dose we need of exercise for your heart health, for this type of thing, for that type of thing. Anyway, I hope that podcast was useful. Mindfulness, that's the task for today. Be aware, be self-aware, and watch your emotions. Maybe journal at the same time. Keep a journal diary of your food today so you can see if you can learn anything new. But other than that, have a good day. Speak to you all soon.